Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude! Hey!
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy. Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude.
O-line you, bunch of dudes.
Lot of dudes.
Yeah! Another dude in the house.
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by 4th and Dude. Season 2, Week 3. Holy Cross was more like Holy Loss on Saturday, as the Eagles enacted revenge over their Coconut Grove rivals, dominating the Crusaders by a score of 62-14. The A.J. Dillon Heisman campaign is officially back on. The preseason is officially over, and the Eagles will look to keep the momentum going as they travel to Winston-Salem on a short week. On today's episode, we'll do some storm chasing, talk dude or pooed, and break down what the Eagles have to do to start 3-0 for the first time since 2007.
Matt, it's been a great 2 weeks so far. I'm really looking forward to finally taking off the training wheels, getting ACC play underway, and finally seeing what this team is all about, hurricane and all. I'm really just excited that we are going to be able to get this game in. We're lucky playing down in this part of the country this weekend. A lot of games are canceled, but fortunately the Thursday kickoff and the short week is actually going to help us here.
It's I think we're the only game left in
just
that
about,
state at least,
yeah,
right?
Just about.
The whole Southeast is these millennials. I'll tell you, they're canceling games left and right.
Well, it's a pretty bad storm, as we'll get into in the segment that you know we're gonna talk some hurricanes in. But before we do
just to be clear, I have nothing on the hurricane forecast. I figured you'd blow that out of the water.
That's gonna be my section.
The storm chaser. So
that's gonna be my section. Yep, Maddie Meteorology is what they've been calling me this week. So before we get into that, I think we should just touch on the Holy Cross game. Again, I think very quickly, because the game was a glorified scrimmage at best. We got, what, a quarter, if that, out of all our starters, just 6 carries from AJ. So, I mean, you know, I look at it as a complete nothing game. It was a scrimmage, as I said. Like you mentioned in the intro, AJ Dillon is still a monster. This was the video game performance that we all wanted, albeit for only 6 carries, but 6 for 149 is pretty remarkable. Got him a lot of positive, you know, press on Twitter and Reddit and all that over the weekend. So all of everyone's concerns about Davon Jones stealing his touchdowns, I think we can put to bed for at least 1 week.
Yeah, I have two notes related to the game written down here, Matt. One is A.J. Dillon, 24.8 yards per carry. That's a lot. That's a really good average.
Good number, yep.
And if you do some math, do a little extrapolation, he probably would have ran for about 1,500 that game if Dats had let him. So pretty solid performance there. Even the twos looked completely, Holy Cross looked completely outmatched, as you would expect. I mean, they're barely an FCS school at this point. So, it is what it is. You don't want to read anything into it. The other thing I had written down here, Matt, was 2 blocked punts, which is also not a good look for BC.
Not good.
But again, I think they had their 4th stringers out there at that point. So I'm not too worried. I know the Daz apologists, is that the right word?
Opposite. Like to, you're a Daz just, apologist.
That's right. Okay. The opposite of that, we'll just nitpick at anything, and people were all up in arms about that, it seemed like. But at the end of the day, hopefully our 4th stringers don't get in there against any real opponent. We got bigger fish to fry. We probably shouldn't be wasting practice time practicing 4th team punts anyway. So it's my take on the game. That's all I have, Matt, and ready for the regular season to start.
Yeah, I hear you. Other good news too, no major injuries. John Baker didn't play. Alec Lindstrom played in his place, Alec is the younger brother, played in his place. Daz says that's kind of precautionary more than anything, and he'll be good to go on Thursday. Other thing to note, Colton Lichtenberg was out. Joe Tessitore's kid was doing all the kicking on Saturday. Apparently that is an injury, and it kind of wasn't discussed. Maybe it's just because like he's a kicker, but
I didn't read that, Matt. That's an insider take.
Yeah, it was mentioned at the Jake and Joe's show on Monday night with Coach Adazio. So yeah, that's all we have there. But otherwise, no injuries. And again, I think you know for coming on now a short week, that was everything you could ask for. Get everyone out, you know, after half a quarter, fully rested. It'll be like you know we're playing on a full week's of rest. So. Yeah, that's what I have for Holy Cross. Heisman's back on. Best team in the ACC still. Best offense in the ACC. Our S&P rating or one of those statistical ratings has us ranked as like a top 10 team in the country, which you know is probably
13.
Yeah, it's probably a little skewed. Again, I'll just blame it on us beating up on bad teams, but it's nice to see BC in the top 15 of anything. We kind of stayed steady in the AP poll, and again, the season starts tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess the last thing we'll say about Wake is you know. Obviously, when you schedule Holy Cross and a UMass back-to-back like that, you know, a couple of cupcakes, and you jump into conference play week three, you know, the concern is that you haven't played real competition yet. And Daz addressed that in the press conference. He said, yeah, we're going ones versus ones in practice this week. It's a short week, but, you know, we're throwing the studs against the studs. Our guys will be ready to play. They're ready to play against a real opponent here. You know, AJ's only played about 10 minutes total this season. You know, he wants to get out there and show the country what he can do. Same thing with Anthony. So, you know, it's really put up or shut up time for the boys.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to imagine these guys are chomping at the bit. You know, ready to face some actual ACC competition. Again, I think we said it, but you know, scrimmages are nice, but this has really been a, you know, 7 week training camp essentially for these guys that no one's played more than a full half yet. So I have to imagine these guys are going to come out flying tomorrow night. We're recording this on Wednesday night. They're going to come out flying. They're going to look really good. And they've been waiting for this for a very long time. So I think that's, you know, enough talk, quite frankly, about Holy Cross. Again, they're just exactly what we thought they would be. So let's move on to the segments. That sound good?
Sounds good to me. All right, I'll kick it off with my dude of the week here. My dude of the week is also my breakout dude of the year, which you guys will remember from episode one. Hamp Cheevers.
Hamp Cheevers, of course.
Hamp Cheevers. There you go. And we'll talk nicknames in a second here, Matt. Hamp is literally the best player in college football, I think, in history. Can I say that? Is that too much?
No, I think that's fair.
All he does is force turnovers, and it's just – It's almost like he's, and you'll know where I'm coming from on this. He's like the Doug Mirabelli of BC football. You get that, Matt?
I don't love the analogy, but yeah, go for it.
So Doug Mirabelli, you guys remember, was the backup catcher for the Red Sox. Used to catch Timmy Wakefield. That guy, at least as far as I know, hit a dinger every single time he stepped up to the plate. He only played it once every five games, but when he was in there, he hit a dinger. I've never seen Mirabelli at bat and not hit a home run. Same thing with Sandy Leon, frankly. I have a weird thing going with backup Red Sox catchers, man. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, both of those, I'm just going to, as the math guy, both of those are statistically very inaccurate.
I'm ballparking it here.
Sandy Leon is one of, if not the single worst hitter on this current Red Sox lineup. But he's a phenomenal catcher, and the players love him. The pitchers love him, and he's the guy that they want behind the plate.
He's got what, 8 homers this year? I've seen all of them at least twice. So okay. I don't know what that means. And let's bring it back to Hamp for a second.
Let's wheel it in.
So yep. Hamp obviously had limited minutes last year, and he still lit it up. He had, I think, 3 or 4 turnovers last year in limited action. He single-handedly won the Louisville game for us with a forced fumble. He had 2 other picks, I think, against Syracuse, maybe, Virginia. I don't know.
I think he might have had one against Virginia, yeah.
And this year, he's continued the same thing. He recovered a fumble against UMass. He had a pick six to end the first half against Holy Cross. All Hamp does is just get his hands on the football and make plays for this defense. He's absolutely electric, and he's going to have a huge season. People are gonna forget who Lucas Big Swing and Dennis even is, Matt, because of how good Hamp plays.
Well, I think they'll just both be really good. Again, you know, one thing that Hamp does that you didn't mention is he prevents future aerial and offensive attacks by the opposition, very similar to what the Camp David Accords accomplished, and of course the Israel-Egypt conflict in the mid-70s. So again, Camp Cheevers Accords, just a reminder of everyone where that nickname comes from.
And I'm going to introduce a new segment here. It's called, hey, probably time to drop the Camp Cheevers Accords nickname by coming up with some alternatives, which actually I crowdsourced to a group, and they came back with some good ones, Matt, all of which are better than Camp Cheevers Accords.
So okay, I'll be the judge of that, but let's hear them. Yeah, I'd love to hear them.
Okay, I'll go in order of they're all pretty good. So I'll just go. Hamp the Champ.
Terrible.
Pretty good.
Terrible. What did a preschooler come up with that? Keep going.
Hampers. Because he catches stuff and laundry catches clothes.
That's pretty terrible.
Hampton Comes Alive. It's one for the older folks. Peter Frampton Comes Alive. He was in a band, I think. I don't know which one.
Is that a famous album? Should I know that? Keep going.
Yeah,
next.
If you Google it, it's Hampton. Okay. And then this last one's not great, I'll admit. It's Hoover. And this one's a thinker. It's Cheevers kind of sounds like beavers. Beavers build dams, and Hoover is a dam. So we call him Hoover because everything I just said above.
I mean this with no exaggeration in the nicest of ways. Whoever came up with that nickname, that might be the worst logical jump and nickname I've ever heard in my life. So you are 0-5 on that.
Coming from the Hamp Cheevers Accords.
You're just going to call him Hoover? That's not even a good nickname. You're going to call him
Hamp Cheevers Accords the entire season.
But you're going to call him Hoover? Like, that doesn't make sense.
Like, can you think of a better backfield in the country that has, by the way, two of the most electric, not electric, but two most unique nicknames
than ours? I would say electric.
Between Lucas and Hamp. So.
I mean, if you're going to go on the Hoover Dam thing, by the way, you're better off doing like Cheevers Dam.
I don't think that exists. Because you missed the point.
No, I get, but Hoover more sounds like Cheevers. I don't know. Hoover is horrible. That's out.
Matt, who's your dude of the week?
Okay, my dude of the week, and no surprise here, but it is Martin Jarmond for, I think, like the fifth time out of 3 weeks. He's been the dude of the week. Finally, this past Friday, he released the throwback year that we have all been begging for. Obviously, the 4th and Dude Twitter account led a big campaign and a big push for him to get that out. But we were joined by a number of folks in the BC Twitter sphere. And I'll tell you what, when this was actually released, when he dropped that video walking through the bookstore with all of the new gear, I haven't seen BC Twitter this excited in a very long time. So clearly the fans and the alumni and everybody eats this up. My hope is that he sees that excitement and it leads to more to come, you know, hopefully including a full uniform overhaul. I was able to grab a couple items, polo and a pullover, of course, but from what I saw, you know, they were flying off the shelves. Like, I checked back later that night and a lot of stuff wasn't available, and then it was restocked. So wildly popular. I really appreciate him for listening to the fans, which is how he started his video. And, you know, quite frankly, to get serious, that is all you can ask for out of your athletic director, to take in the feedback that the fans are going to provide to actually, you know, better the program and you know, to give things that they enjoy. So great job by Martin Jarmond. Again, dude of the week. He's kind of my Adazio of last year for you, where Adazio is your dude of the week every year. I could see Martin being my dude of the week every week for the remainder of the season.
Look, I don't disagree. I think, you know, obviously he's done great things as AD thus far. You and I saw him live during the reunion. He's a absolutely electric speaker. And he's very easy guy to root for and get along with. Just a couple days ago, he posted a picture with Jared Dudley just popping around New York. So
yeah,
he's
just the only negative on that. He's in New York all the time. He always tweets pictures of it, but he has not mentioned it to us yet. He knows we're 4th and Dude Records.
Yet, huh?
He knows the 4th and Dude Records in New York City, and he has neglected to mention it. So thank you for bringing that up, because that might penalize him for Dude of the Week next week. So I'm going to ban him from being Dude of the Week next week.
But I mean, that's all it is as an AD. It's something Brad Bates couldn't do, and it's something that a lot of people couldn't do. It's just listen to the fans, right? Listen to the fans, and you come up with a retro logo and you say, hey, guys, I'm listening. I think that's 90% of being an AD. I think I'm probably qualified to be an AD at this point. That's literally all you have to do.
Yep.
And hire the right people, obviously, which he has with Coach Adazio.
Of course. Yeah, because everyone knows he made that hire. Anyways.
Shoot.
Yeah, it's close. You had it.
We didn't fire him, though.
He didn't fire him
last year when he could have, I guess.
It's just as good as hiring. Yep, exactly. Dude or Pood, you want to get us started here?
Yeah, speaking of Daz, I'll get into the Pood, I guess. So this isn't really a great one, but there's one or two people out there that were saying, why are we playing Holy Cross? What's the point? Why are we playing an FCS school? Why is our schedule so weak this year? Because UMass turned out to suck. They also brought up Temple. Temple just lost to a couple really terrible schools, Buffalo and then, an FCS school, I think.
Villanova.
Yeah, Villanova, that's right. And so the whole thesis was, and obviously it's Daz haters that haven't gotten with the program yet, but they're, you know, they're saying, oh, Daz is beating his chest about beating two horrible programs and, you know, thinks we should be ranked and all, and just putting words into his mouth and making up, you know, claims about the schedule. Literally everyone plays FCS schools. It's cool that we're playing Holy Cross. We're bringing back a rivalry. We're giving them a nice little payday. We're keeping their football program going. The fans had a great showing. They obviously care about their football. There's wins all around here.
It's a no-brainer. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to spend too much time because I think it is literally probably one person.
And it's Dan Shaughnessy, by the way. Dan Shaughnessy, Holy Cross alum. Yeah, he was the loudest of all of them. But yeah, it's absolutely idiotic logic. It is a win-win. Like you said, every single person has to play FCS teams. They have 40,000 people in the stands for an FCS game. That won't happen with any other program in the country that we could bring in, you know, as an FCS opponent. ATL Eagle had a good article last week, but basically, you know, the schools that we should actually play for our FCS game should be like, there's like 15 of them. They should either be Catholic colleges or they should be Northeast schools. Simple as that. And Holy Cross obviously checks both box and adds in the extra awesome element of used to be one of the best rivalries in college sports.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. Only thing I'll say about the whole Temple thing is when we scheduled Temple back like 3 years ago, they were coming off a number 20 in the nation ranking. They were 10-3. People were jacked up when we scheduled Temple, but it's like, hey, let's just, you know, nitpick about anything we can and hate on Daz and hate on everything because that's who we are. So
he has come out and said, and like he's the first to admit this, that like he would like to have, he likes to have a light non-conference schedule because the ACC is so hard, which, you know, it would be cool from the fans' perspective to see, you know, Auburn come into alumni, but I also get his logic. We have, you know, by default, 8 very hard games on our schedule. We don't need to make it worse by tossing in, you know, powerhouses where we have to. I'm happy with future scheduling, at least that we have so far. You know, we got some exciting, you know, good destinations, Stanford type stuff. But yeah, I'm with you. I think.
Well, we also have, you know, Rutgers, and I think we have, is Kansas coming up?
Kansas is coming up.
Which is kind of the Ohio State way to do it, right? Yeah, Oregon State, exactly. And then Rutgers. And exactly. So, I mean, that's not a bad way to do it either. Get some Power 5 wins, but have it be the lowest of the low. It really doesn't matter. It matters what you do in conference. And, you know, there's not a lot of to gain by, you know, having a tough out of conference slate when you play in the hardest conference in the country.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. My I'll go with my poot here. It's again pretty weak as well because it's been a pretty easy week. I'll start this with the caveat that the scrimmage does not matter, and as Daz said, this was like the fourth unit and mismatched, but it was concerning how bad our backups looked throughout basically the entire time they were in, with some exceptions. Obviously, like EJ Perry looked good when he got his minutes and some other guys looked good. But for the most part, for a lot of the game, really after the first quarter, Holy Cross, you know, played pretty even with us. Obviously, we wore them down at the end and size and all that. But it's a little bit concerning, even, you know, with our third string. And hopefully these guys never actually see action, you know, this year at least. Obviously, they have time to get better. But it was a little concerning at the time to say, all right, you know, Holy Cross, who is a bottom of the barrel FCS team, is, you know, basically holding strong with our threes. Again, it's a rich person's problem. Like we shouldn't. It's not the end of the world that our threes are not, you know, going to win the ACC this year. They'll get better and they'll be able to practice prime ones again. Pretty clean week, so nothing really to complain about. And that's all I had.
Yeah, and ultimately, these threes will become twos. Mm-hmm. Maybe they will become ones, but you know, the headline is that they're getting some minutes, they're getting some quality practice in against, you know, maybe not top opponents, but they're at least getting their feet wet.
Live,
they can
live
learn from it, and they won't lose any eligibility because of the new redshirting rules. So it's a win-win all around, and I think that's why Daz wasn't all that worked up about the punts or anything else that went wrong in that game.
Right. No, I'm with you. On the positive side, just two quick ones. I love that we have this new play in the playbook. I call it the pick six before halftime play. I don't know if that's the official.
Which
name
one is
for
that?
It.
What do they do on that one?
So it's usually in like the last 30 seconds. Sometimes it's actually the last play of the half. But they will get an interception and run it all the way back for a touchdown just to completely deflate the opposition. They must have been working really hard on it in the offseason because it's worked flawlessly so far in the first 2 weeks. They've only done it at the end of the first half rather than the second half. I would love to, you know, see if they are willing to expand that as, you know, games get closer. But
right
now,
I think
they
want to go pretty vanilla for the first couple games. Maybe they're going to pull that out against Wake.
Completely agree. But yeah, you know, huge credit to Daz and Jim Reed and the entire coaching staff for working so hard on that play in the offseason. Really just added a new dimension to our playbook. So that's phenomenal news. My second one that we'll talk a lot more about in a little bit, hurricane tracking. Obviously,
yeah, weather related. Yep. Here
yeah,
we go.
Of course it is. And you know, obviously the storm that's coming is not to be trifled with, and it's terrible and it's a natural disaster. So nothing about that should be a dude, and it's not. But the physical tracking of the storm, I'll tell you what, this week has been an absolute rush. Following the 5 a.m., 11 a.m., 5 p.m., 11 p.m. updates from the National Hurricane Center, seeing how the storm has shifted, slowed, turned westward, whatever, just trying to figure out if we're going to get this game in. So it's been a phenomenal few days of tracking this storm, and I'm excited to talk about it a little bit later on in this podcast.
I wish I enjoyed anything in the world as much as you enjoy weather.
I was texting you. I was texting you like 15 times a day with different updates.
I had to set you to ignore because I was at work and you were texting me about the weather, and I just can't get as jacked up about it as you do. My dude this week is going to be AJ Dillon, and just how, not only how he kind of transcends football at this point at the college level. I know it's Holy Cross, so we don't get too worked up, but it was pretty clear to see, you know, to the illustration of just one of the top players in college football going against people that are not the top defensive players in college football. And it was the easiest thing in the world for him. And it was, I've never seen anything like it at the college football level before. Howard was bad, but the mismatch of AJ Dillon compared to these Holy Cross defenders was unlike anything I've never seen. But really my dude is AJ's press conference after the game. Everyone was asking about you know, those runs that he had, and it was like, hey, AJ, how many yards do you think you could have gone for? How many touchdowns do you think you would have had? And immediately, all he does is just redirect all the credit to his teammates. I know it's kind of corny, but it's cool that he's only a sophomore. He's a young kid.
He's remarkably polished.
Immediately, he's redirecting the question. He's being like, hey, yeah, that was cool, but how great was it that Ben Glines and CJ Lewis got their first touchdown?
Yeah.
So having a kid like that in the program is enormous. You know, beyond his athletic ability, it's just awesome that we get him for one more year after this before he becomes probably the first overall pick in the 2020 draft.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's a credit, you know, obviously to him and you know how he was raised, but it's also a little bit of a credit to you know, I think the staff at BC. I'm sure they coach up these guys a little bit. Obviously, it's clear that he's got a tremendous amount of natural ability when it comes to the press conference side of things, but you know, also give a shout out to our, you know, whatever SIDs or whoever coached these guys up to actually talk.
How about Coach Adazio?
And Coach Adazio. Yep, we'll give him credit. Although Coach Adazio, I love him, but he's not, you know, necessarily the most eloquent guy. Inyaki.
Another hard disagree.
That's fine. I think if we go down that road, this will be a 3-hour episode. So I don't have a lot for Eagles. I don't actually have anything for Eagles in the Wild. I don't know if you do.
I can kick it off. It's a quick one. Obviously, week one of the NFL kicked off this past weekend. This might be my Eagles in the Wild every week, but D-back U is back. Justin Simmons and John Johnson.
John Johnson looked phenomenal on Monday night.
Sick. They had some sick interceptions in week one. So shout out to obviously Coach Adazio, first and foremost. shout out to Coach Campanelli for building up these guys. I mean, they're just incredible. They're great for the program because it's not just that BC guys get drafted. It's they play. They start and they make impact plays.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The other Eagle in the Wild that I do want to mention, because you mentioned him last week, Matt Ryan, of course, played on Thursday night. He was your starting quarterback in our fantasy matchup. Again, I think we've covered this in many episodes, but we do actually have other friends. It just happens to work out this way that whenever we talk about it, it's Matt and I playing each other in fantasy. We do have other friends in this league. But anyways, he was your starting quarterback. And I had this joke queued up that I just pulled up here. Matt Ryan, you said he was an Eagles in the Wild. He was more like a Falcon in captivity on Thursday night.
Matt, that's... let's do Deus Corpus. Is that next?
Yeah, I'm gonna. I'll start with the first one. In general, this was a pretty bad week of matchups. Week two was just a lot of you know, FCS Group of Five games, especially for the ACC. The only real test we had as a conference, when I say we, was Clemson. Of course, they did survive it. It was actually a pretty good game. They got some interesting calls, specifically that fumble on the goal line. But overall, kind of a boring week. As far as the ACC is concerned.
Yeah. I mean, the other primetime game was obviously Pitt at Penn State.
Not good.
The score got out of hand.
Not good.
Pitt gave him a game for like the first quarter and a half, though, so there's something to be said there.
That's true.
But outside of that, yeah, it was a quiet week. Obviously, the other one to talk about is Florida State. Florida State barely squeaked by a team that
they
I didn't know existed.
Stink.
Samford, which could be, if you give me 50 guesses what state that's in, I don't know that I'd get it. But they were down, I think, into the fourth quarter. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it was pathetic showing. I mean, it just goes to show how smart you and I are, because we were all over the Florida State still stinks, and Willie Taggart is not Bill Belichick, and you know, Francois is not Tom Brady, and they're not just going to figure it out overnight. They were horrible last year. They're just as bad this year. They've already given up on the entire season. They brought out the turnover backpack, which is the most pathetic item I've seen in the sporting world in recent memory, and I would just be so embarrassed if I was a Florida State fan. And so I'm so happy for so many reasons that I'm not a Florida State fan or alum, but just an absolutely embarrassing showing and really bad look for all of the ACC voters who said they were going to be the only ones who would give Clemson a tough shot this year.
I can't figure them out because you know Francois's good. You know that they have skill players.
Do we know he's good? Like, we know he's good because everyone says he's good.
No, I mean, before he got hurt, I don't know what their record was when he played that full year as a freshman, but, you know, he led them to at least double-digit wins, right? And then he was hanging tough with Alabama even last year. So, I don't know. It's kind of bizarre, but you know they have the players. You know they have the talent. Obviously, the offensive line's a huge issue, but irregardless, I mean, let's see what happens this weekend against Syracuse. That's really a really good barometer for just how bad your program is if you lose to Syracuse.
Yep.
Eric Dungy's feeling it against, you know, some terrible teams. But it's still Eric Dungy. He knocked off Clemson. And I guarantee he must be a senior by now, right? He's been at Syracuse for at least 7 years. He's been there longer than what's his name? McNamara. I don't know. We'll see what happens this Saturday. But I think if Florida State loses to Syracuse, we can officially call them done. I think they're officially done.
Syracuse, the only thing I'll add, their offense actually looked pretty good again against two not great opponents, excuse me. But their defense continues to be horrible. So that could be a shootout. And yeah, Florida State loses, it's over. Two other just quick notes. Purdue, our opponent next week, lost to Eastern Michigan. So they are terrible.
Well, they're up and coming.
That's turned into a game that if we lose, we have serious issues. And then the other one, shout out to our very good friend and former guest of the program, Patrick Tolles. Huge win for Kentucky this weekend over Florida. They definitely deserve a shout out. I would say that was the biggest upset and the biggest win really of the weekend. I guess Arizona State, Michigan State was a pretty big one as well, but that was a big one. And we continue to creep up in the top 25. We're staying pretty steady at 28, which isn't surprising after this week.
I think that's a win when you play Holy Cross. You don't drop back.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Although I'm a Gamecock guy. The Gamecocks, as everyone knows, are my SEC school. And it was tough. They just were completely outmatched by LSU. So that was tough to watch.
Yeah, I don't know what you think, but personally, if we win this week, and especially if it's convincing, I see us pretty much a lock for in the 20 to 25 range come next Sunday.
Yeah, no question. I haven't done the complete analytics and figured out who's ahead and who's everyone playing, but yeah, no question. I like us to be. Well, Matt, let's focus on beating Wake first.
Let's get a win. Let's get a win. Yeah, so with that, let's move into Wake, but you have to adjourn the court first.
Court adjourned.
Good job. Thank you. All right, Wake Forest. So before we get into it, I do want to just talk a little bit of hurricane stuff. We are recording this now on Wednesday night, so just less than 24 hours till kickoff. There was a lot more uncertainty earlier in the week when I was really chasing the storm, so I'll kind of give you what we have now and where we stand. So putting my Maddie meteorology hat on for this one, really took that character to heart over the past couple days. Like I said earlier, storm chasing is just a total rush. Now I get why Jim Cantore has so much fun all the time, although he does not answer us on Twitter, which is a little bit annoying. So anyways, we have Hurricane Florence bearing down on the southeast coast of the United States, projected to be one of the strongest strikes on record on this part of the East Coast. Normally, as everyone knows, the storms hit Florida, the Gulf, kind of that general area. But this is going to be really bad in North and South Carolina. And now with the latest projections, going to be even more into Georgia, a little more southern. So the forecast has been changing a lot throughout the week. You know, it was originally supposed to hit, midday Thursday. And at that point, the game looked certainly in doubt. But throughout the forecasts that have come in, the storm has slowed slightly, as well as shifted slightly west and slightly south. So while, before we're just going to come and sit on top of North Carolina, now it's going to hit a little more South Carolina and Georgia, as well as North Carolina. Again, as I said, with the forecast, it's continuing to slow, which is worse news for real life, because now it's going to hit the coast and basically just sit on top of the land and not move on and just dump rain. The flooding's gonna be really bad and it's gonna be really dangerous and all of that. But as far as we are concerned, as far as only football is concerned, this is good news for the game. The landfall now, which again is just the eye of the hurricane, important to keep in mind, but the landfall is now, I think, pushed back to Friday afternoon. So we have plenty of time, and it's about 150 miles wide, and Wake Forest is like 200 miles inland. So we have plenty of time to get this game in on Thursday night. It should be pretty much completely unaffected by the weather. There might be some rain or some light wind, but I think that's honestly independent of the hurricane, just kind of some other weather systems. The main concern beyond actually getting the game in, obviously, when there was questions, was more about getting the players, officials, fans in and out of Wake Forest, as well as not overutilizing resources. So again, now that there's a little more time, that's not as big of a concern, though still a big concern. They moved most of their Saturday games to Thursday night in the area, so they felt pretty confident that Thursday night's going to be good to go. Yeah, high school games, exactly. So canceled a ton of our college games in the area, so we're lucky to get it in. Worth, I think, the most notable one that to note is NC State, West Virginia canceled their game.
Just too bad. I was looking forward
to that. Yeah, that was going to be a great game, and now it's pretty much certain that NC State's going to come into our game undefeated because they're not playing anyone. They play UVA and Marshall the next 2 weeks. So
I guess that's the upside.
Well, it's just going to look good for them, and they're going to be excited, but you know, it's not going to really show us anything. But yeah, overall, you know, a really fun week, you know, which is, I know, kind of a messed up thing to say, because I obviously, first and foremost, we hope everyone stays safe, and that's our number one concern. Football is certainly not our number one concern in this situation, but it was wild to track all the different forecasts and keep an eye on everything. And so I get it. I get why people become meteorologists. I could see that as a career. I've considered quitting Fourth and Dude and my real job and chasing hurricanes, but I think I'll hold off at least for the next season, at least.
And I'll speak purely anecdotally here, and I don't want to be insensitive to hurricanes because I know they're very serious and they're very bad. The only run-in that I really had with a hurricane was in my South Carolina days. Hurricane, not Hugo.
Wait, like did you?
That was a really bad one.
Did you live in South Carolina? People don't know this. You don't mention this. You don't mention this enough.
Oh, it comes up. Hurricane Floyd was supposed to be, you know, the worst hurricane since Hurricane Hugo and beyond. I don't know. I was probably second grade or something. And we got, you know, 3 or 4 days off of school canceled just preemptively, which was a real treat. And it came, and it never came. So it didn't actually come. I guess I'll rephrase that. It never actually came. It was, I remember it was like the Thursday that we were off from school, and it was sunny and 75 out. So you never know what these hurricanes are going to do, whether they're actually going to hit. This one seems like a pretty sure thing.
This is a sure thing. It's going to be very bad.
But we're going to play some football beforehand just to be on the safe side here. And I mean, there was a ton of implications on the football side. You know, had they not gotten this game in, I didn't read the bylaws of the ACC contract or whatever, but I know from precedent, at least as far as the SEC is concerned, you know, there's a situation between, I'm not gonna remember the teams, Florida and LSU.
Yeah, a couple years ago,
where the game got canceled and then they determined that they had to play the game in order to be eligible for the SEC championship, which Florida was in contention for. So they ended up squeezing it in at some point. But either way, having a conference game rescheduled is kind of a nightmare. So there were a couple of options out there. And frankly, Matt, I was kind of rooting for a October reschedule so we would avoid this true freshman quarterback that looks like he's Johnny Heisman. So unfortunately, we are going to have to face him.
All right, but you understand that if he continued to be this good, they would just actually start him over Kendall Hinton come
October. That's a good loophole. Yep, that's not a loophole I considered, Matt.
He's not dying tomorrow. I'm really happy we got it in just because I'm psyched for this game watch tomorrow night at Dewey's.
We're ready to see time is, you know, awesome. The Eagles against some real opponents.
Real team, yeah. I'm tired of waiting, right? Absolutely tired of waiting. All right, so enough hurricane talk, although I'm going to sneak a little bit more in about 2 seconds. But
sure, you will.
On to Wake Forest, on to an actual opponent this year, this year so far. So it's time to talk some actual football. But before we do so, we, of course, have to get into our usual topics. Fun facts, travelability, again, different from tailgateability for road games. And we're doing a little bit of a change of our top five notable alumni. But you have any fun facts to get us started?
Yeah. And mine's actually really fun. We'll see if you get it just based on, you know, without me explaining it first. The Winston-Salem, or let me start over. No, that's a good start. The Winston-Salem, the city of Winston-Salem has a minor league baseball team, which is a single A affiliate of the White Sox. And they're called the Winston-Salem Dash. Thoughts? Do you get it?
Winston-Salem Dash. I don't get it.
Because Winston is hyphenated with Salem, so that's like, it's hyphenated, it's like Dash, Winston-Salem.
Interesting.
They used to be called the Warthogs back in 2008, but they changed to the Dash.
Interesting.
Which, the Dash, I hate as a name, and the Warthogs are great, so not sure what they were doing there.
So that's not that fun.
That's my fun fact. Matt, I'll tell you, Wake Forest itself is really difficult to get fun facts for. Maybe you had better luck.
Well, no, I agree. High and low. I actually remember the same thing last year, so I switched this up. And again, I mentioned Hurricanes were going to come back up. But I'm making my fun fact this week about Hurricanes. So I have a couple here. First one is not fun. It's actually terrifying. But Hurricanes have killed over 2 million people over the span of the last 200 years. So that's horrible.
It's a fun. The segment's called Fun Facts.
All right, it's more facts about hurricanes is what I'm changing the Wake Forest Fun Facts section. I'm taking a lot of artistic license this episode, again, as we'll see in the top five notable alumni section. So that's my first one. They are called typhoons if they happen in the Northwest Pacific, cyclones in the South Pacific, and hurricanes in the Atlantic. So they're all the exact same storm. It's just a matter of where they occur. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Typhoons are purely in Asia, though, right?
Yeah, Northwest Pacific, right. Like, so typhoons are like specifically Japan. Cyclones are pretty much anything else in the South Pacific. And then lastly, so to track them, to actually figure out, you know, wind speeds and everything like that, they have a group of the Air Force that is specifically designed to fly planes directly into the hurricanes and like drop a bunch of measurements out of it. So they literally, and there was video of it, you know, on the news this week of planes flying.
Like Armageddon a little bit.
Yeah, into and out of the hurricane eye, which is like just bananas. I don't like flying.
Oh, but they're anywhere. They're not trying to break up the hurricane.
No, you're thinking you're thinking Armageddon, where they flew to an asteroid and then blew it up with a nuclear. Maybe
before
it would work
gets
here.
To zero barrier.
Right. Maybe it would work here. I don't think they've tried that. This is more just for measuring and making cool videos. Probably a lot of turbulence. I don't like flying in nice weather. So God bless those guys.
Got it. All right. So as Matt said, we have the typical segment. It's the notable alumni starting five plus six man. However, as you guys are aware, we did this segment this time last year. We've already done Wake Forest starting five and six man. So my co-host came up with a great idea that remains to be seen how great it is. But it actually, I was skeptical at first, but I think you guys will like it.
It came together nicely. So rather than do top five Wake Forest alumni, we're going to do, for any school that we've done so far, do top five basically opponent nicknames. So like when we play Clemson, we're going to do the top five Tigers of all time. So like spoiler alert, Tiger Woods will be on that list. So for these guys, it's a little tougher because there's Demon Deacons, which is not a real thing. So there's
really
again,
difficult.
Some artistic license here. The only thing I do want to add before we get into our six picks here is that the real life Wake Forest alumni did have an astronaut as well. I know that's been a running theme we've seen. They did have one astronaut. I've got some good ones here for the Demon Deacons, top five Demon Deacons. I don't know if you want to get started with the number one overall pick. I don't know how excited you are about yours or what, but happy to go first or you can take it.
I have a lot of non-number one picks. Why don't you get it kicked off? This is your segment.
Sure.
Let's see how this goes.
Sure. So first overall pick, I'm going with Deacon Jones. He was a Hall of Fame defensive end for the Los Angeles Rams, known as one of the greatest defensive end of all time, nicknamed Secretary of Defense. Died a couple years ago before the Rams moved back to LA, which is unfortunate because he was big, you know, on that campaign of trying to get them back to Los Angeles. But yeah,
can I cut in?
Yeah.
Deacon Jones, get this. I added a fun fact here about Deacon Jones. He gave himself the nickname Deacon after joining the Rams because there were too many David Joneses in the local phone book.
Interesting. That's a very fun fact. That? Is that a true fact?
Yeah. That's on his Wikipedia page.
That's a really good fact. So he was on your list as well then.
Yes.
The only thing
there's not a lot of other Deacons.
No, there's not. It was a short list. So he got involved in acting after the NFL appeared, and you probably know him in shows such as The Brady Bunch, The Odd Couple, Wonder Woman, Alf. So just a phenomenal resume, one of the best defensive ends of all time, and apparently a good actor. And named Deacon. That's kind of checking all three boxes there.
Well, I'm in trouble here, Matt. That was one that I figured I just had to have in order to make this list work. But let's see how this goes here. My first one is going to be Dementors.
Nice.
So that's from Harry Potter.
Pretty good.
I don't have to explain it. They were the original, targeting. Maybe not targeting. What's the word I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
The Dementor's kiss.
Targeting. Yeah. They lowered the helmet.
It's kind of, yeah, it's sort of like unnecessary roughness on their part. But I'll tell you what, our linebackers play a lot like Dementors. So I'm kind of getting this back to football here. Mm-hmm. The way that they attack the ball carrier. So, Dementors is my second pick. My number three pick is going to be Jocks Timothy Demonbrien, Demon Bruin. Who was a Frenchman, who was the first citizen of Nashville. And as you know, Nashville is a great city. So we're stretching here. I understand that, Matt. But Demonbrien is a famous street in Nashville. It's parallel to Broadway, which is, you know, where all the magic happens. And actually, this is the first ever breaking news that we've had here. I'm officially having my bachelor party in Nashville, so it's, it's a topical one as well. Yeah, thanks. So,
that's awesome.
And he was a Frenchman, and he was the first citizen in Nashville, and he was a, I think he was a French and Indian war hero as well. So
okay.
Demumbrian.
Demon is in the name there, just again, to make sure everyone is following along here. I like that. Matt, you did really good. You kind of undersold yourself. You came in strong there.
Well, we're in trouble for number 5 or 6. So,
I got you. I'll take it. I got a top 10 here ready to go. With the 4th overall pick, I'm going to go with Dave Bautista, former WWE champ and WWF champ under the ring name Deacon Bautista. I think he also goes by just Bautista, but Deacon Bautista was at least his name for a little while. 4-time heavyweight champ. He won a couple tag team matches with Ric Flair. Longest reign of any world heavyweight champion of all time. He headlined WrestleMania 21. He's now an actor, mainly known for his role in Guardians of the Galaxy and the Avengers. He's a humongous guy, and he was also one of the bad guys or one of the henchmen inspector. Deacon Bautista, again, on the Demon Deacon theme. That was the 4th
pick. How does that fit into the his name's David Bautista?
Yeah, but his wrestling name was Deacon Bautista.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Yeah,
so Demon Deacon. I'm going to go with my 5th pick here. A gentleman by the name of Irving Crane. So he was one of the best pool players in the history of the sport, but he is nicknamed the Deacon, is why he fits here. He has 6 world billiard titles, which is, I think, just a tremendous number. I think that's a hard feat to achieve. So one of the best of all time, nicknamed the Deacon for his work on the green felt.
Okay, the last one on my list here. I was kind of having this one off to the side because I think I'd have to present it. But we'll do a shout out to all the older listeners. Matt, have you ever heard of Steely Dan, the band?
Certainly have.
They're like sneaky, one of the best I don't even know what the genre is, but I enjoy listening to them, is I guess I'll say.
Okay.
They have a song called Deacon Blues, which is just an absolute electric factory. That is my list of Demon Deacons.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, I'm very impressed. You know, I think you were a little hesitant to this idea when I presented it and a little gun shy about your picks, but great job.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I think it will get easier. This was probably the hardest. I think Orange will be tough when we play Syracuse. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, sure. All right, next, the last bit before we actually talk football, which I'm sure...
Do you have honorable mentions? I want to hear your honorable mentions.
Oh, yeah, I got a couple. Thank you for reminding me. So Deacon Palmer was the name of Kevin James's co-worker and best friend on the show King of Queens, which is a funny CBS sitcom in the early 2000s.
Is it? Is it funny?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
I like to think my humor has evolved a little bit from when I was in, like, 6th grade, but whatever. And then my last one, this is, again, because I'm, like, you know, a math guy, whatever, Thought Experiment Demons. So it's kind of a term of, you know, philosophers when they're coming up with logical thought experiments. They imagine these entities that have special abilities as a way to highlight paradoxes in their thought experiments. So, you know, Descartes and Laplace had a couple famous thought experiment demons. I'll give a good example here. A guy by the name of Maxwell. So it's known as Maxwell's demon. Basically, he had this idea that there's a demon that can distinguish between fast and slow molecules. And if this demon only lets fast moving molecules through a trap door, the temperature inside a container would increase, which would increase without any work being done, which violates the second law of thermodynamics. Because obviously, as we all know, entropy needs to remain the same in a, you know, given environment. So that's kind of an example there, again, kind of for the you know, smart BC folks that we're talking to. So that's all I had.
Apologies there for asking about honorable mentions.
Yep.
Let's keep the show moving here, Matt.
Yeah,
thank you for that, for sharing that. That was great. What's next? The tailgate ability rankings?
So travel ability ratings, again, for road games.
Well,
travel ability.
Oh, that's right.
It's out of 5 RVs, residential vehicles.
Well, so
vehicles.
Matt, I want to make an amendment to that. I think that we should keep the scale the same. And I've been thinking about this a long time. You went and went rogue on me with the natties. You changed the natties to the Bud Light for the tailgate ability rankings. Can we just keep the rankings consistent? What's the difference between 5 RVs and 30 RVs?
That's a lot of RVs, man.
Yeah, but 5 is, I mean, it's a good amount too. I mean, I think we're... So anyway, so mine's out of 30. So I was kind of prepared to win that argument. So I'll go first. So the travelability rankings to Wake Forest, which wasn't part of my fun fact, but Wake Forest is not located in Wake Forest. Wake Forest is actually located 2.5 hours outside of where Winston-Salem, which is where Wake Forest is located, just outside of Raleigh. Anyway, I have 14.3 RVs on account of the hurricane conditions, obviously bringing it down a little bit. Other than that, it's a huge game. It's kind of cool to have, you know, 5:30 game on a Thursday. You can ditch work early. You have a couple cold ones on a school night. You're down south. There's no rules. Again, the weather's bad and people are evacuating. So other than all that stuff, things are going great. So 14.3 RVs. I'd love to be down there. It's tomorrow's gonna be a great day.
All right, you're a little more positive than me. Again, I'm with you on the positives of the game. It's the start of ACC play. 2-0 versus 2-0. We're chomping at the bit to see what this team actually has. I think it's a sellout. If not, it's a virtual sellout. It is a night game, bumped up to 5:30. This is where the negatives come in. The hurricane, no traveling. It would be a very bad idea for anybody to go to this game and to go in the area when you don't need to be. If this was a watchability score, this would get 4.8 out of 5 RVs. But because it is not watchability, it is travelability.
What's the math?
Well, because it is travelability, I'm giving this 0.4 out of 5 RVs. No one should be traveling to this game. And it would be awesome if it was a nice night, a nice September night. And it might be a nice September night, but it's not a good time to be traveling down there. Stay home. 0.4 RVs, which will be 2.4 RVs on your scale of 30. Math guy, not a big deal.
Wow. I can't check that in my head, so I actually assume you did that correctly. That seems really low, Matt.
It's a hurricane. Don't travel during a hurricane. It really could not be.
The hurricane's not going to hit you for a while. You have plenty, and it's probably not going to hit at all if Hurricane Floyd has anything to say about it. All right, so with that, let's talk some football, how we match up. Matt, what do you have your eye on? Get it? Like a hurricane?
Oh, that was a pretty good pun. I think I'm excited to see what this quarterback, Sam Hartman, is actually going to bring to the game. Everyone is talking about him like he is the second coming. This guy's played two games against Tulane and Towson, not exactly the fiercest opponents. Obviously, the offense looked good, and we talked about it a little bit last show, but the offense looked better than the points that it put up against Tulane in kind of an overtime victory. But at the end of the day, they did struggle and start slow with really both these teams. I mean, Towson, they were tied in the second quarter, obviously pulled away, but I do think we're playing them at the right time. Starting QB, Kendall Hinton, suspended for the first three games. Tons of injuries over the first couple weeks for them. They've lost, I feel like, 10 guys, 10 starters pretty much every week. It's been pretty brutal down there. Obviously, we've been bit with the injury bug in the past, so a lot of sympathy there. And, you know, obviously you want to beat them at their best. But this is the first game either team has seen of ACC speed. I think, you know, we noticed it against UMass and Holy Cross, but it looked like we were playing on rookie mode and our opponents were playing on, you know, varsity. It's going to look night and day when we actually go against an ACC team. So I am really excited to see how we stack up against them. They are very fast by all accounts. They've got this electric punt returner and wide receiver, Greg Dortched. He had two punt return touchdowns against Towson. The guy is apparently just like a lightning bottle of speed. So they're very fast and on a lot of their skill positions. So I'm excited to see how we match up against all of that.
Yeah, and just taking a step back, I mean, this Wake team had a great year last year. You know, Wake, for over the past, you know, 10 years or so, has really been more in the cellar than anything else. And I think they got to 8 wins last year, really on the back of, is it John or Bobby? Is it Bobby Walford? One of the Walford brothers.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
I think it was John.
John. Yeah. It's John. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we saw week 2 against them when we got blown out, I think 34-10. It was Anthony Brown's, you know, first real game, right? I guess you count Northern Illinois.
Yeah, Northern Illinois is real.
This kid, Sam, whatever his name is, Sam Hartman, he's kind of in Anthony Brown's shoes at this point. It's his first, you know, real game against big competition. You know, Anthony made some mistakes that game that he probably won't make this time. From a matchup standpoint, it really comes down to, you know, they're solid in the air, right? We're solid on the ground. Both of us have really good lines. But with the weather, right? Weather's the great equalizer, which I think actually is a detriment to us in this situation. I think we're a better team overall. I think we're a more complete team. But weather also favors the team that can run the football.
I agree. But again, I'm with you on your first point there. I think that there's no need for us to even introduce a wild card here. Again, I don't think it's actually going to be a wild card. I think it's going to be a pretty nice night. But, you know, you look at like Notre Dame, NC State a couple years ago, obviously it wouldn't be that bad. But you don't want to, when you're the better team, you just want to be able to just beat them straight up. You don't even want to throw in any extra variable. Yeah, it would help us, but that's kind of my thought on it.
Their defense is absolutely atrocious. Mm-hmm. Tom Flacco, who is the younger brother of Joe, who I don't believe is elite, but maybe he is, but he plays for Towson, who, again, I don't think is a real school, but apparently they are. He hung 345 yards, 3 touchdowns on them last week. So I think 20 touchdowns can probably do some damage, especially if the weather's cooperating.
Yep.
You know, Dylan's going to show up. So, you know, at the baseline, we should have no problem you know, beating these guys. The only thing I'll say is, you know, they do have some playmakers. You touched on Dortch. They have those like three-headed running backs.
Yeah, Cade Carney and Matt something, I forget.
Colburn, yeah.
Matt Holburn, yeah.
And you touched on it earlier, but this true freshman quarterback has not been playing like one. I know it's Tulane, I know it's Towson, but if you watched him live, we were hurting for football a couple weeks ago, and they were on against Tulane Thursday night. He looked really good. He looked really comfortable in there for his first ever start. I'm kind of scared. It just crazy stuff happens when you play against true freshmen. Obviously, the you know, the Jake Fromms and the Tuas of the world, right? I'm not saying he's in that category, but he had a great highlight against. I know it's Towson. He had a great highlight where he I think it was an RPO, and he made a great read, and he ended up running for the touchdown. And I just think that, you know, he can be sort of an X factor. We don't have any tape on him, or I guess we have a couple games at this point, but he's kind of an unknown at this point. So between all that, I'm nervous. This is a Wake Forest team that is really a mirror image of BC over the past few years. A lot of people are saying that it's going to come down to coaching, and a lot of people are giving that edge to Dave Clawson, who is a good coach. He's not, in my mind, Coach Adazio, but remains to be seen at this point. So I don't call this a slam dunk win. I'm confident, but there's so many variables involved that it's enough to kind of make me nervous.
Yeah, I'm with you. Again, I think that we are definitely the better and more complete team, but this is the most nervous I've been about a early season BC game maybe my entire life, and really the reason is because I think that there's so much riding potentially on this season. I think that we have a team that if it's the team that we think it is, this is one of the best teams in Boston College football history. I don't think that's you know, an over-exaggeration, at least what we think this team could achieve.
After Holy Cross, after UMass.
Well, no, but even, you know, the preseason hype, whatever, if they come out and they lay an egg or you know, get beat, even in a close game, that just kind of ends our, it vastly shortens our ceiling on what this season could be. Where before we're talking 11 wins, 10 wins, hell, 12 wins, that quickly ratchets way down. The expectations ratchet way down. So there's,
and people are calling for Daz's head again.
Right.
I can already
there's
see.
There's a
it.
Ton of, this is, this
he's
is,
got
I'm
so much
so
talent
nervous.
That, oh, by the way, he recruited, but you know, whatever. That's a separate issue.
Look, we haven't
we'll
lost
save it
yet.
For
we
next
haven't
week
lost yet to
we
save
lose.
It. Yeah,
I know.
It
I'm already ready to defend against all the pitchforks. So
yeah, again, I cannot wait for kickoff. You know, it's a little too bad that it's not 7:30 for the watching sake, just because I think, you know, it'd give everyone more of a chance to get to wherever they need to get to. But I do think it helps us because I think that the stadium will be slightly, I'll even say significantly more empty. Wake didn't cancel any of their classes, which, you know, I don't, who knows how much that actually matters. But then I think a lot of people won't be traveling in for it or just won't want to travel in general with the hurricane coming, you know, overnight. So I think that it will be a subdued home atmosphere, which is, I think, a pretty big upside for us. The only other thing I want to talk about with Wake, or two things actually. So one, they've been pretty sloppy this year. Again, we talked about them playing inferior opposition. They have 5 turnovers so far, 3 of those in the air. So for all the good stuff we've seen out of this freshman QB, he has still made freshman QB mistakes, 3 picks against 2 bad teams. So, you know, if our defense can be the defense that we expect and that we've seen so far, if we can get in their backfield, Zach Allen can get some, can get hungry, and we can get, you know, the ball hawks back in the defensive backfield, you know, some opportunities to make plays. I think that there's a humongous opportunity there. Last year in the game, that's what killed us, was we got destroyed in the turnover battle. Hilleman had that terrible intercept, terrible fumble. AB, Tony touchdowns before he was
pick
Tony
six.
Touchdowns through terrible
pick
six. Pick
six. First half, right?
So, you know, it really, in games where you're even somewhat evenly matched, it's going to come down to who is playing tighter, or, you know, who is playing the more clean game and the more put together game. So that's my main thought, is it's going to kind of come down to the turnover battle. Again, I think we are a much better team, and I'm hoping it shows, but it'll be a nerve wracking day tomorrow until kickoff hits.
Did you already talk about Dortch and his 2 return touchdowns?
Yeah.
You did say that?
He's an electric factory. And again, the way our special teams have looked.
Yeah, let's get our special teams in order.
Not great, right?
Yeah. I mean, not even a punter. Even who's our punter? I don't know. Carlson, is that his name? I mean, even on a clean punt, he can't get it very far. And if it is bad weather, then, you know, it really becomes A, turnovers, and B, field position. So
right.
If in addition to that, you add Colt maybe being hurt, Tessitore missed an extra point. So, you know, if special teams is not where it needs to be, then and that's a reason we lose, despite the, you know, what appears to be a talent disparity, that would be very unfortunate.
Well, that's my hope. That's my hope, that we are just such a better team, and it doesn't matter. You know, like if we win by 30 and we miss 3 extra points,
it's going to be a close game, though.
It's
always close against Wake. It's always close against Wake, and it's always, except for last year. But other than that, if you go down the list, we always play close with Wake for whatever reason.
Well, this is also the best team we've had in years. So I'll get into my predictions now. I think that, again, we've talked about it, but I really do think we are a much better football team. I don't think Wake is as bad as I maybe thought they were going to be coming into the year, or even after they played Tulane. But I think we are such a better football team. There's a significant part of me, and the optimist in me, sees this game playing out a lot like UVA did last year. And again, I'll say that this is all assuming that the weather is fine. Weather is not a factor here. I see this being a lot like UVA last year, where UVA came in strong and they were this upstart team, and they were good, but they were good for being UVA, and we just absolutely smoked them. We were faster, we were stronger, we were cleaner, and on every single phase of the ball, we forced turnovers, we had explosive plays, and we ran them out of the building 41-10. There's a big part of me that sees this game going exactly that way, and then we feel stupid for being worried. The other side of me that's probably more realistic, I can't get over the fact that we are just a better team. AJ will wear them down, and their O, I don't think we'll get much going against our defense. So I do still think we win pretty comfortably, but my final prediction is going to be 30-17. I think it will be a little hairier than I would like it to be. It'll be tight, but we'll grab a couple points at the end and pull away a little bit. Scoreline, I don't think will reflect how close this game feels. Again, I'm hoping that my optimist side is right and it's not even close from 5 minutes into the first quarter, but I guess we'll see what happens in about 20 hours.
I mean, their defense stinks on ice. They're really, really terrible. If Towson can get to, mid-20s, I think we can get a bit higher than that. So right. My official prediction is going to be 38-35, and it will be exactly as close as it sounds. I think with Wake, and they're well coached. They do have playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. It might turn into a shootout. I don't know. This true freshman, I'm on the record again and again saying he scares the crap out of me. He's a young Bobby Walford, whoever the Walford first name is.
He's a young Walford. And, just leave it at that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Matt. So we'll see what happens. But either way, it's nice to have some big time football. I don't want to say big time. We're not there yet, but some real
football.
ACC, real football ready to go. And it's going to be great to watch tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I think we'll wrap it up with any final thoughts on your side?
Yeah, I just, Matt, we need this one, obviously. I don't want to say this podcast is canceled if we don't have it. But hypothetically, say we do lose, it's going to be very, very difficult to stay in the national conversation. So this is
and we're
as
so
must
close.
Win. As must win of a game as we've had in a really long time at the Heights.
Yeah, I completely agree. We are so close to that, to breaking through to that national conversation. So a win here would go a long way. Like I said, I'm just chomping at the bit to get real football underway. I cannot wait for this game tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be one of the longest work days of my post-grad career, just waiting to get till 5:30. But we'll see you all at Dewey's right after work. If you're in the New York area, enjoy the game from wherever it is you're watching. And of course, a special shout out to our listeners. And fellow BC fans, and really just everyone in the Carolinas or anyone traveling to the game, be safe out there. That's obviously much bigger and much more important than any football game that may or may not be impacted by the weather. Beyond that, as always, follow us on Twitter and the Gram at Fourth and Dude for our commentary on all things Eagles throughout Thursday night. We'll I'm sure be pretty loud throughout the game on Thursday, both good and bad, and then throughout the week afterward. And Matt, I say it every week, but the road to 15-0 marches down. 2 down, 13 to go.
It's always a great day to be a dude.